Billy Whitebird shoveled in a mouthful of cereal.
Look it. Johnny's a TV star.
With those looks, he's a natural. Too bad we're all likely to show up on screen right next to him. Especially you, with that jack-o'-lantern face of yours.
Under the circumstances, Anya found it hard to feel more than an academic appreciation for the Iron Horse's gallows humor. They sat in the living room of a club safe house, a sprawling ranch style set off by itself down a country lane, well screened by trees and surrounding terrain. Evening light filtered in over the tops of heavy curtains. Shown to a room of her own by her hosts on arrival, Anya slept most of the day. She woke to find it had hit the proverbial fan. The TV switched from an image of a mug shot of the absent Johnny Ten Bears to a newswoman in a rain slicker standing by a rain-swept gully as technicians in coroner's jackets hauled out a body bag from behind her.
The latest victims in today's shocking wave of violence in the Lawton area, which has claimed at least 6 lives, with several more missing and feared dead, are 2 of our own. Reporter Monica Stevenson and her cameraman, Rondé St. John. They were discovered in this gully west of Lawton and south of Fort Sill just 45 minutes ago. Both had their hands bound behind their backs by wire, and both had been shot once in the back of the head. Their bodies also showed what a Comanche County Coroner Department spokesperson described as signs of torture.
Bad sign.
Angel sat next to Anya on the couch with her legs drawn up beneath her. Anya hadn't realized before how petite the Comanche biker woman was. She probably wasn't even 5 feet tall. Her leather jacket seemed to dwarf the rest of her.
Notes discovered on Miss Stevenson's computer reveal she headed out early this morning to meet with a confidential informant who has been aiding her in an ongoing investigation into a shadowy western Oklahoma Native American group calling itself the Iron Horse People Motorcycle Club. Authorities are blaming the club for the current violent crime wave. Special Agent in Charge Lamont Young of the Lawton Office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation has just announced that the Department of Homeland Security has named the motorcycle club a terrorist group. We switch now to a live press conference.
Can we change the channel?
Billy Whitebird sat in a reclining chair eating his cereal from an outsized mug.
I hate that dude.
Ricky, who sprawled on the floor with his back propped against the couch next to Angel, clicked the remote.
Motorcycle gang are the persons of interest included in our investigation. Beyond that, I...
On CNN, some news face was interviewing Georgia Bell by video feed.
Let's move on before somebody heaves a boot through the screen.
He turned to a cartoon channel.
Young was involved in the Waco massacre, you know.
Anya raised a brow.
He seems young for that.
It's that smooth baby face of his. Easy to maintain when you don't have a conscience.
I think he's aching for an opportunity to try again with the same tactics and get a better outcome.
Angel, why did you say the report about the bodies of those TV people was a bad sign, other than for them?
Bad news for us. It means the Bureau is going for a shock and awe publicity blitz. They usually don't release details like that, especially while they're hauling the bodies to the meat wagon. It was a setup to naming us terrorists and Johnny as the FBI's most wanted.
You sound very authoritative.
Angel shrugged. She looked acutely unhappy.
She used to work for the U.S. Attorney's Office.
She was an up-and-coming young prosecutor. And she's older than she looks, too.
What happened?
I grew a conscience. Or woke up. Whatever.
Ricky patted her thigh comfortingly.
Fortunately, it didn't start to age her. Like a vampire in the sunlight, or whatever.
Billy set the empty mug on a TV tray beside him. The three Iron Horses had been in the house when Anya emerged sleepily an hour before. They pointed her to a well-stocked kitchen, where she'd braced herself with a big slice of pan-fried ham, eggs, and beans. She was forcing herself to take it easy. She'd driven herself hard for a long time, since weeks before flying back to land hip-deep in the horror that happened to Paul and his associates.
So, Billy, feel free to tell me this is too personal, but what on earth is that tattoo on your stomach anyway?
Sorry, but would he go around without a shirt on all the time if he didn't want people asking about that tat?
Hey!
Billy pulled up his stained white t-shirt.
I'm wearing something today.
Just be glad he didn't compensate by leaving his pants off.
Anya leaned forward to peer at the artwork etched on the broad canvas of Billy's belly. She saw it was a beautiful, remarkably intricate work in blue ink, after the fashion of a 19th-century newspaper lithograph. It displayed what she took for a Comanche warrior riding his pony away from a small party of U.S. Army cavalry, who, from their bearing, she guessed, were a general and his staff. The warrior was showing them his bare backside and slapping it for emphasis.
That's, remarkable. How long have you had it?
Since I was a kid. All these years, I still kept my svelte shape, you see.
He slapped his belly, which jiggled. Anya cocked a brow.
And you served in the military?
Oh, yeah. Where I learned my trade.
What did they say when they saw that tattoo at boot camp?
Semper Fi, Marine.
He braced in his chair and snapped off a perfect salute. She stared at him a moment.
I served in Iraq, round one.
Billy leaned forward to settle his beefy elbows on the table.
He's older than he looks.
Anya turned to see Johnny Tenbears, wet hair hanging over the shoulders of his colors, grinning at her from the door to the kitchen.
Not to mention worse.
Much worse.
Have you been here all this time?
Heck no. Just came in the back.
I didn't hear you.
Good. Engine warriors specialize in sneaking up on unsuspecting white eyes. I'd have to hand back my Boy Scout merit badge and Redskin perfidy if I couldn't pull it off.
I knew Johnny's daddy even. We served in the same Marine Expeditionary Unit. Then again, us Numenu boys always tended to stick together. Kiowa too. All us engines did.
He made a face that made him resemble a jack-o'-lantern more than usual.
Of course, old Tom and I come to some pretty opposite conclusions about what a good idea that whole war was.
Yeah, he has a habit of coming down on the wrong side of every fence. When he gets off of it, that is.
That killed the conversation for a moment. Sorry, Billy mouthed to Anya.
Where have you been?
Johnny came and sat unselfconsciously on the floor near Anya.
Walking up and down in the world, going back and forth in it.
Old joke.
For you, maybe, Ms. Renaissance Scholar.
He was probably hiding your rental car somewhere and getting rid of that Magnum you brought back.
That's right.
You came in last night?
You were snoring like a chainsaw. It was downright cute.
Uh-huh.
So was that horse pistol hot?
Radioactive, probably.
Anya hadn't wanted to dump it anywhere herself after her escape from the training center slaughter. The chance of discovery was too great. Whereas the Iron Horses had, as she assumed, ways. As indeed it seemed they had.
You want to know what I did with it?
No. But how about my car?
Stashed in a garage in town in case somebody tracks it. When you need it, we can get it back.
So what are your plans from here, Miss Creed?
Good question. I'm still determined to track the Skinwalker killer and stop him. I haven't forgotten that, even if everybody else has. Also...
She hesitated, afraid of sounding too presumptuous. Then she thought, screw it, my whole life's presumptuous.
I want to clear your names. You were right about the Dog Society. All of it.
She had told them what she saw the night before.
And I was wrong. I don't want to see you suffer for their crimes, past, present, or future. Don't forget, I enjoy pride of place on the Dog Society's hit list. I'm the witness who can nail their coffins shut. And they were after me even before I got caught like a complete fool spying on their little terror confab.
So why didn't you go to the authorities, Anya?
As in Special Agent in Charge Young, or as in your father?
Either one.
You think this is the first time I've lived by the maxim, if you don't dare call the cops, call the outlaws? Anyway, isn't that a funny question for an outlaw biker to ask? Especially one who just hit number one on the FBI's most wanted list.
Not so much, Anya. I think what we're all wondering is why you made that choice. It's not the same as advocating it ourselves, right?
Anya reminded herself that what looked like a sweet high school girl playing at running with the pack was a woman who was probably older than she was, and an attorney to boot.
All right, fair enough. I don't trust law enforcement.
Should I ask the blatantly obvious question?
I trust your father. That doesn't mean I trust everybody around him. There are too many ears in that Department of Public Safety office. Not just his fellow officers, dispatchers, clerks, people from other divisions walking by the door, the UPS dude. They don't even have to be moles themselves. All they have to do is tell the wrong friend or family member something exciting they heard. or even say it in front of the wrong random person.
Billy turned his somewhat scary grin on his chief.
She's a smart one, Johnny. Admit it.
When did I deny it?
Plus, the feds are almost certainly monitoring his cell phone.
You do realize that would be illegal, Anya.
That doesn't mean they're not doing it, right?
Right. Another reason I quit.
So, what are you playing?
I don't know yet. Hang with you guys if you'll let me. Use this as a base and wait for some kind of opportunity.
Johnny looked to his comrades.
I like her, Johnny.
Fine with me.
I think she's a keeper.
What about the rest of the club?
They're not here. Okay, make yourself at home.
Do you have a better plan? Anybody? I'm asking that seriously.
Johnny shook his head. Then he flashed his dazzling grin.
But opportunity'll break somewhere. It always does.
I just hope it breaks in time, she told herself, before there's a lot more heartache. She had to admit, she didn't like the odds.
So what we got here is what we call in law enforcement, technically, a big old mess.
Actually, Anya was willing to bet they called it something much worse, but she wasn't about to contradict Tom Ten Bears. They stood together next to the grid marked out by the OU archaeological dig team. The sticks leaned, the twine boundaries sagged forlornly. The wind plucked them like flaccid violin strings, eliciting no music Anya could hear.
And we're right in the middle of it.
That surely is the case. Where have you been hiding from me, Miss Creed?
If I told you, it wouldn't be hiding. Am I in trouble? Have I gotten you in trouble?
Not yet, to both. That was a cute trick to set up this meet. Why go all around Kicking Bird's barn to do it, though?
She called his cell from a payphone. She told him to go to where they first met and ask about her. At the ICU of the Norman Medical Center, they gave him a handwritten note. It read simply, dig site.
I don't want to be arrested, much less die.
You don't trust the authorities?
Anya turned to face him.
No. You told me yourself nothing happens in Indian country that doesn't get seen.
He stared at her for a moment. Then, slowly, he nodded.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
It doesn't necessarily mean a traitor.
Tom turned away.
But it's possible. Likely, even, now that I think about it.
Then there's the feds. I didn't want to risk them listening to your calls.
He turned back.
You really think they... Whoa. No need to finish that, is there?
He walked a few steps away from her.
I'm a patriot, Ms. Creed. Any true Indian is. Think about it. The American white eyes beat us. That must make them the best there is, huh? So theirs is an honorable path to follow.
He shook his head.
And it's a good country. The bad things that were done a long time ago, they were plenty bad. They're also long past. In the end, your people treated mine better than a lot of conquered peoples have gotten. And we're accepted. Mostly.
Yes.
She wasn't sure where he was going with this.
I've fought for this country, not just in Iraq, and I still believe in it, but...
He shook his head again.
I can't believe in everything it does, done in its name. I can't believe in what it sometimes seems it's becoming. I see the part I played in that, and I feel ashamed. Is that wrong? Am I weak?
No, and no.
Why did you want to talk to me, Miss Creed?
I didn't want you hunting for me.
Well, that's pretty upfront.
I also don't want to lie to you, Lieutenant. Mainly, I don't know if I could get away with it. Is anybody looking for me?
No, not formally.
That set Anya's danger antennae to quivering.
What does that mean?
Well, that Georgia Bell from the nation's special investigative unit has been putting the word out. He really wants to talk to you. Seems he thinks you're part of the problem.
A chill ran down Anya's back like meltwater from a snow-covered branch.
And you're not going to hand me over to him?
Him? George has always been strong in the body, and he's anything but stupid. But he still's never showed many signs of being worth much. He likes to lecture people on the glories of our ancestors riding across the plains. But he's always done most of his riding on his daddy's coattails. Him and his little rich boy pals, they went off to school and got law degrees. Then they come back, and the next thing anybody knows, they got him this shiny new SIU. Most folks hereabouts just reckon that's another toy his daddy, Rich Ronnie Abell, bought for him.
So that's a no, even though you're a stand-up lawman.
Having a fancy badge don't make you a lawman in my book, Ms. Creed. George wants to talk to you, let him do some real police work for once and run you down himself. Anyway, I still want you helping me track down this serial killer. Not like anybody else is looking for him.
He stuck his hands in his jacket pockets.
It's cold out here. Don't know how the ancestors put up with it without pockets.
What do you mean, Lieutenant? About nobody looking for the skinwalker?
Well, we've been passed by. We're old news. All these poor dead people, nobody's interested in that now. Serial killers were all the hot thing a few years ago. Now it's terrorists.
They pulled you off the investigation?
No, only just about everybody else.
I saw something the other night.
What?
Anya told him what she'd witnessed in the training center. She left out any indication she'd done anything other than duck and run. And, of course, all mention of the sword. She let him think she'd escaped by a combination of resourcefulness and dumb luck.
Well, why didn't you call me then?
You already know that. The dogs had already set me up for abduction. Then I went and blew up their terror confab. How do you think I'd have wound up if I blurted that on the phone?
Yeah, like that poor reporter girl yesterday. I knew her folks, you know. She interviewed me a few times.
I'm sorry.
Hey, if bad things only happened to people who deserved them, people like me'd be out of a job. You too, I think.
What?
Now, why'd I go and say a fool thing like that? You're just an archaeologist, right? Anyway, looks like we've got us a full-blown war between rival gangs of would-be terrorists on our hands.
What do you mean?
From the news, it surely looks like the Iron Horses have struck back at the dogs.
You believe them?
They got evidence. Monica, Miss Stevenson, was investigating the Iron Horses. So who else was it went and did her and that poor camera fella like that?
The Iron Horses tell me otherwise, she thought desperately. They figured the dogs must have been setting Stevenson up for this for weeks, to frame the horses. She believed them. For one thing, she'd seen both the Iron Horse people and the Dog Society up close. She knew which bunch kept trying to kill her, but she couldn't tell him.
Where you been keeping yourself, Miss Creed?
I have contacts in the area. From my college days.
It was true, as a matter of fact. Also irrelevant.
I've got help.
Tom looked worried.
You sure you know what you're doing?
No, but it's what I have to do.
Don't play this too cute. The stakes are too high. The game is too ugly.
I'll try not to. I don't want to end up like Miss Stevenson. I promise.
And let me give you one bit of advice. Stay clear of the Iron Horses, and especially John.
What about you?
He looked away from her, squinting up into the rain that began to spit from cloud bellies the color of bullets.
I'm going to find him before anybody else does. That's a promise.
And then?
And then? Well, a man's got to be able to shoot his own dog.
Snake stormed into the safe house that afternoon.
You talk to that policeman!
Anya was sitting on the couch, looking at her computer.
Yes?
Anya shut the laptop and placed it beside her. Snake coiled her sinuous length onto a footstool and regarded Anya without friendliness.
So, you're crashing here with us?
Wait, you're not going to accuse me of selling you out?
You're not stupid, even if you don't always have much sense. We're your only chance of survival as long as you stay in the area. You think the dog soldiers couldn't reach out and touch you if you were locked up in a cell?
No, I know perfectly well they could.
You could always fly away home to New York.
Anya wasn't at all sure that would work. If she left, law enforcement was likely to take an unhealthy interest in her. She felt, possibly irrationally, that her best chance for avoiding that kind of uncomfortable scrutiny was to see this thing through. For that matter, the dogs weren't likely to give up on her scent either. As long as they were at large and scheming, they threatened her.
I'm not leaving. I still have my friend's death to avenge.
You mean that? I thought you liberal white college girls didn't believe in vengeance.
I do.
point to you.
Also, I don't want to see the Iron Horse people made the scapegoats here. I feel responsible in some way.
You aren't. This was going on a long time before you got here. Probably go on a long time after you've gone.
Some of it, maybe. But I'm not going anywhere until I see things settled with the Skinwalker. And the dogs. Why am I so convinced that they're tied up together in this?
There was way too much coincidence involved. The Skinwalker and the dogs seemed to be coming from the same direction. With this wave of murder breaking things wide open, the terrorists and the shadowy serial killer had to be working together by now. If they hadn't been all along... Snake gave Anya a sidewise glance.
Johnny likes you.
And that's a problem for you?
It distracts him. At a time like this, that's not good.
But the long, lean Cheyenne woman wasn't meeting Anya's gaze, she noted.
I think he'll manage.
He better. He's a great man. He has the potential to be a catalyst. Help people create serious changes. Changes for the better. I won't let anything happen to him.
Good. I hope you're right.
Captivity quickly bored Anya silly. Her natural drive to be off and doing things soon turned into a caged panther frustrated pacing. She didn't even dare log online to get email. Anya thought of her Chasing History's Monsters producer, Doug Morrell.
At least Doug can't bug me here.
It was a blessing that law enforcement hadn't released to the media any of the details identifying the I-40 killer as a Skinwalker. Otherwise, Doug would have been after her to follow up the monster angle with an eye to doing a show about werewolves. Fortunately, her few friends and her co-workers were accustomed to her dropping out of sight for protracted periods. They had convinced themselves she contracted out to do things, like help authorities in far-flung countries track down relic poachers. And occasionally, that was even true. Though Anya kept a large selection of books and research papers on her handy little computer, she could only spend so much time reading.
I gotta do something before I bust.
She wasn't literally a prisoner. Not of the Iron Horse people, anyway. She wasn't sure why they treated her so hospitably. Although the more contact she had with them, the more she found herself liking them. And vice versa, apparently. But if she left the isolated safe house, she risked being trolled by law enforcement or abducted by the dog soldiers. And there always remained the chilling possibility that they could amount to one and the same thing. Anya didn't even dare go for a run in the hills. That would increase the risk of being spotted too much. She could go outside in the yard and do some practice with her sword. The house had no clear sight lines for any great distance, especially to any road or neighboring dwelling. The majority of the time, she had the place to herself. Clearly, the club had other safe houses and secret hideouts. She figured most or all the Iron Horse people had some other occupation than mere motorcycle outlaw, especially since she knew that selling drugs, the popular income stream for modern biker gangs, was something they didn't do. They seemed in many ways oddly prim for a band of outlaws who carried weapons and were willing to use them. Their day jobs were going to be threatened if it was known they belonged to what the FBI now loudly trumpeted as a domestic terrorist group. Anya felt safe swinging the sword in the backyard. And in bumming around the house in general. So much so that habits from her rare and cherished intervals at home in her own Brooklyn loft began to kick back in. And so it was the second afternoon alone that Anya emerged from the bathroom, after the shower, for the short walk down the hall to her sparsely furnished but comfortable room, wearing nothing but a fuzzy towel wound around her long wet hair in an impromptu turban.
Well, oh!
And promptly found herself face to face with Johnny Ten Bears.
Is this what you've been doing all this time? Running around the house buck naked? Sorry I've been away so much.
Anya felt all too aware of his presence, his very male presence. He was a big, healthy, young, masculine animal who smelled of outdoors and motor oil and a hint of sweat dressed in his colors and olive drab t-shirt and faded jeans. He stood within her usual personal space for the simple reason that she'd all but walked into him when she came out of the bathroom. And he stood there, smiling appreciatively at her, and did not step back. She felt a surge of fear. How well do I know this guy, she thought. I'm totally in his power, as far as he knows. The sword's constant absent presence was, as often, a comfort, but not a major one. He was strong and panther quick, she knew, and well trained. She should always keep in mind he'd been an army ranger in Afghanistan. At these close quarters, he might well immobilize her before she could summon the sword, or even disarm her if she did. As was her reflex, when ambushed, she counterattacked.
A gentleman would look away.
I'm not a gentleman. Not exactly part of my cultural heritage.
Damn it, he is attractive, she thought. The European concept of gentleman may have been alien to his tradition, but his bearing was as beyond confident assured as any medieval lord's. She began to understand just why the Comanche had once been called Lords of the Plains. She stomped past him down the hall and slammed the door to her room behind her. Anya's philosophy was, if you crash your plane, you need to get back in the air as soon as possible. So within 5 minutes, she was dressed in jeans, a t-shirt, and a bulky man's flannel shirt her hosts had lent her. She even put on socks and shoes, instead of going barefoot or in stocking feet as she usually did. Then she stalked out to the living room.
Okay, by next week we should...
Johnny sat talking earnestly to some of his bikers. When one's glance registered her, he looked back over his shoulder and grinned.
You got all dressed, did you? Don't feel obliged to do it on my account.
That's precisely why I did it, Johnny.
Oh!
Not afraid to stand up to anybody, are you? In any circumstances.
I haven't met everybody, nor under every circumstance, so I can't say for sure. But so far, no.
Angel, who was on the couch, invited Anya to sit beside her. Anya did. It seemed safest all around. More members came in as they discussed the difficulties they were having trying to earn a living, much less trying to track down their rival dog soldiers without getting picked off, either by the Dog Society or law enforcement.
FBI's living up to its reputation. Basically, they trample around alienating everybody.
Standard operating procedure for the Bureau.
Bigger trouble is the Stateys.
Ricky cast a sidelong glance at Johnny, who was eating a pear.
Because of my father.
Anya frowned. She felt a burning urge to argue the case with Johnny. It seemed vital to her for any number of reasons. Not least the fact she found herself liking and respecting both men, to somehow find a way to get the two past their mutually interposed walls of pride and misunderstanding. But it didn't seem the sort of thing to discuss in front of the rest. It felt too personal. Besides, she was pretty sure that in front of his clan, Johnny would feel especially challenged and resist listening to anything she had to say.
So we're keeping out of the way of trouble, but that's not getting anywhere. We can't afford to play a waiting game for very much longer. Sooner or later, they'll start to run us down.
The good news is the dogs haven't stuck their ugly heads up much since they went on their killing spree a couple days ago.
The TV news reported 3 more bodies found.
The bad news is we can't turn up any trace of them either.
Ricky leaned in to grab a handful of chips.
Maybe they're afraid they overstretched and shut it all down.
Fruit and various snacks had begun appearing periodically as the discussion went on. But Johnny, who for once had bound his hair back in a ponytail that hung well down his arrowhead-shaped back, shook his head.
We wish. They're preparing. The casino opening's tomorrow. They're using their success in transferring the heat to us to get ready for their final move.
Angel absently tousled Ricky's hair, which he wore relatively short.
But what will that be?
That's the bitch of it. The clock's running on us. But all I can see to do now is sit tight and wait for their next move. And that truly sucks.
Johnny looked at Anya.
Unless somebody has a better idea?
I wish I did.
Billy sat back in his chair and put his hands behind his head.
One thing on our side.
Do tell.
We may be running out of time, but what we don't have is a definite deadline. The dogs do.
The casino opening.
Yep.
Well, we just have to hope that's enough. Now, we want something serious to eat. I'm hungry.
So isn't that a strange activity for outlaw bikers to take up?
Anya picked up a slice from one of the pizzas someone brought and plopped it on her plate. Outside the windows, night had arrived. At least a dozen of the Iron Horse people had gathered in the safe house living room. Disregarded, the television flickered in the background.
Fostering a barter network among the Comanche and Kiowa communities? Even whites, if I'm hearing you correctly?
So you figure we're not doing enough armed robberies, then?
Oh, it's not that at all. You're just being difficult.
Johnny held a piece of pizza in the air, tipped his head back like a hungry baby bird, and bit off the dangling tip.
You expected something different?
Well, we ride bikes, and we do things we think are right, whether or not they're strictly legal. So I guess that makes us outlaws. So, outlaw bikers, huh?
Tell her about the project you and Snake cooked up, Billy.
Anya craned around to look at Snake, who sat on a footstool off to one side with her tattooed arms crossed. The woman gave her a thin smile.
It's about getting people set up for small-scale power generation. Windmills, solar, there's some really exciting technologies coming up the pike. Make localized and even household-level power generation more and more feasible. Snake there handles the technical aspects. She was a real black program electronics whiz for some DARPA-connected company before quitting to go in the wind.
You're kidding.
Not a bit of it.
Okay, here's something else I don't understand. Aren't you supposed to be big on restoring your native traditions? And yet here you are trying to promote some pretty high technology.
Them high and wide old days in the plains, they're gone forever, Anya. And we wouldn't bring them back if we could.
I'm officially confused now.
We're exploring, experimenting, trying to find the proper balance. Even that's not the right word. What we're working on is finding and making use of the best of the old and the new.
So we're looking to maximize our advantages.
Anya cocked a brow at him.
Don't mind, Billy.
Johnny helped himself to another slice of pizza.
He got himself a degree in economics a couple years back. Pretty much the only dude in the OU program to do it while working full-time as a fleet mechanic for a local trucking firm.
Anya looked around at the dark, cheerful faces.
Is this some kind of PhD's only motorcycle club?
Well, we are a motorcycle club. We all love to ride, love the sense of freedom it gives you. And freedom's what it's all about for us. But you're right, that isn't all we are.
Johnny picked up a napkin and dabbed grease from his lips.
I didn't start the Iron Horse people, see? That was Billy, years ago. He started,
we call it networking now,
getting together with some like-minded people. People interested in getting off the grid. People interested in trying to build a society that'd work without involving the government at all.
In some ways, the luckiest thing that ever happened to us Comanche and Kiowa was getting screwed out of our reservation by the government.
Snake stepped over to the group.
Reservations were always just a nice name for concentration camps.
That's true. And reservation Indians have always been wards of the state. Any crazy-ass bit of social engineering theory that came up, they got force-fed like laboratory guinea pigs. They basically have no control over their own destinies, their own lives. One week, the official policy is to wipe out Indian culture and force everybody to be a fake white man. Next week, suddenly they're trying to preserve traditional ways. Only those traditions are what some bureaucratic hobbyist in Washington thinks they are.
He shook his big round head.
No wonder people take to the bottle so much.
What about the income from the casinos? That seems to be making a lot of money for a lot of tribes.
Which mostly winds up lining the pockets of the tribal governments and their cronies.
Is that why you're opposed to the new casino opening tomorrow? I mean, I'm not sure how much power the Comanche Nation government has since they don't have a reservation to administer.
Increasing income to the nation from casino receipts can only centralize wealth and power. Encourage people to support a sort of top-down model. Those up top bestow largesse on those below. Saps the independence of the people, too, makes them dependent. The polar opposite of what we're about.
So you think it represents voodoo economics?
I thought it was more the way socialism works. The notion that concentrating wealth and power and calling it the state will somehow help the masses.
This is all pretty wild. Half the time you talk like total radicals, half the time you sound like some kind of militia types out of the 90s.
The Iron Horses looked at one another.
Yeah, looks like you're starting to catch on.
as it got late, the Iron Horse people began to drift away to wherever they'd lie low for the night. Because of their strong comradeship, which Anya found so appealing, they were willing to risk bunching up for limited periods of time, but they understood the value of dispersal. A single bad break wouldn't wind up with all of them dead or behind bars. When the crowd had thinned, Anya went into the kitchen, where she found Johnny Ten Bears elbow deep in foamy water.
What kind of biker lord does the dishes?
Anya propped her rump against the edge of the kitchen table.
The kind whose turn it is to do the dishes. Anyway, you already know we're not exactly an orthodox motorcycle club. And besides, the word lord sure doesn't apply to me. The concept's not part of the South Plains Indian culture. You should realize by now these particular misfits are the very last people on Earth who'd submit to any kind of lord.
What are you, then?
Speaker? Guide? It's all by consensus. Persuasion. Everything's voluntary. That's a tradition we definitely want to keep. Nobody has power over anybody else. Nobody wants it. Nobody had consent to letting anyone have power over them.
I can see why your ancestors had such a hard time adjusting to the European-derived overculture.
Well, some of us adapted way too well.
So, Billy didn't resent your taking over as whatever you are?
Oh, hell no. I do take responsibility for keeping us together and seeing everybody cared for. Road boss is probably the best term for what I actually do. Billy's good at doing things, and he's more than a bit of a dreamer. A hell of a dreamer. But he isn't fond of responsibility.
So how'd you get tied up with the Iron Horse people anyway?
Well, I've known Billy Whitebird my whole life. You probably noticed my father and I don't see eye to eye. It's always been like that, ever since I was little. He wanted me to play GIs and Nazis. I wanted to play cowboys and Indians, and have the Indians win. Billy was an old war buddy of his who turned into something of a surrogate father to me.
Oh.
When I got back from my second tour in the stand, I was pretty messed up. Not physically. I was lucky that way. Not even psychologically, like so many of the people I served with. That's one place a lot of us Indian types have an advantage. Comanche is still a warrior culture. We know what we're getting into.
So, how were you messed up then?
Morally, I guess. Let's just say it turned out we weren't fighting for what I and most of my buddies thought we were. And I began to see how that reflected a country that had turned into something other than what I thought it was. Except, as I started to study a little deeper, I came to see maybe there hadn't been such a big change after all. That the country wasn't about things like freedom and opportunity and tolerance that we'd always been taught it was. Never had been. But it was all a bill of goods we were sold so we'd line up and turn into obedient little consumers and conscripts.
That seems like an extreme reaction.
Johnny looked back at her.
I'm not asking you to agree with me. You asked a question, I'm trying to answer.
You're not interested in persuading me?
Not really. We mostly look to help people who look to help themselves. Opinions don't matter much one way or the other. Actions do. Anyway. If people need to be talked into being free, what's the point?
Anya took a few moments.
You and your father should try to work things out. Seriously.
Johnny put the last dish in the rack, pulled the plug from the sink, and, turning to face her, leaned back against the counter.
Kind of ambitious, given that he's set on hunting me down.
But that's all based on misunderstanding. The way your whole relationship with him seems to be.
Now you're an authority on Ten Bears family politics?
I've met and spoken to you both. I respect you both. And it doesn't take any kind of expert to see what's going on. It's so obvious. Unless you're too close to the situation to see it. And too blinkered by pride.
It's not just pride. We're like polar opposites, him and me. You know how I said earlier that some of us adapt too well to the white man's ways? My father's Exhibit A. A classic case. Always making jokes and playing up to the white folks. Doing everything but tugging the forelock or strumming a banjo.
But your father uses his sense of humor, don't you see? Whether it's to fool suspects into underestimating him or showing up pompous whites without them even knowing it. It's not any kind of self-abnegation. If anything, it's a kind of assertion of self.
Or passive aggression, or whichever shrink-speak catchphrase you care to use.
You're both strong men. You're both looking for ways to face the future without losing your identity as individuals or as a culture. Your solutions aren't all that different, really, if you just look at them. Even your political beliefs aren't as far apart as you think.
He gave her a skeptical look.
Your father's adopted the overculture's ways, but his outlook is wholly his own. Even his humor's an Indian tradition itself. I don't pretend to be an expert on Native American cultures any more than on your particular family. I do know enough Indians to know what kind of sense of humor so many share.
I've been a rebel all my life. I tried to fit in. That was part of what joining the army was about. And what I learned from the army was, I didn't want to fit.
But you're not a terrorist. I may not be on board with everything you believe, or even do, but there's no need for you and your father to be enemies, or even at odds. It's just such a waste.
No. We're doomed to disappoint each other. It's just the way it is. Good night, Anya. I'm going to bed.
For a full minute, Anya stayed alone in a kitchen dimly lit by the single fluorescent fixture over the sink.
Why do I have the feeling that this could have gone better?
Sunlight lit up the curtains of Anya's bedroom and made a bright band across the top.
Anya, you should probably come pretty quick. We got a situation.
Snake, Billy, and Ricky were in the kitchen when Anya entered. Billy was pouring coffee into mugs. A small TV on the counter by the fridge was on. A glum-looking man in a tan trench coat stood in the right foreground. To the left, a block or two behind him, many vehicles with flashing lights surrounded a white building with a peaked roof standing well up above the budding trees.
No change in the hostage situation in an Assembly of God church in Eastern Lawton.
This sounds bad, but how does it concern us?
Snake kept her eyes glued to the set.
Comanche Star Casino opens today. You believe this is a coincidence.
But what does a standoff at a church in town have to do with the casino opening 20 miles out in the county?
No demands have yet been made by the hostage takers, nor did they identify themselves when they called an area radio station an hour earlier to announce they had taken hostages. Now we're getting reports in the newsroom that there have been no indication of crimes or police pursuits taking place in the area that might have led fugitives to take innocent people hostage. As of now, nothing is known except that the pastor, a maintenance man, and two parishioners are being held captive by unknown gunmen. Or at least that's all the authorities are telling us.
Good diversion.
Anya could hear others coming in. Obviously, the safe house was an emergency mustering point for the Iron Horses. She felt a spike of alarm.
Is it a good idea to bring everybody here? I mean, the police and the feds are going to be made berserk by this. If this place is compromised, wouldn't it give the dogs and the FBI the Waco-style extravaganza they both want?
They looked at her.
Not bad for a white chick.
Johnny came into the kitchen, smelling of cold air and outdoors.
She's right. I wasn't thinking too clearly when I put out word to gather the tribe. Well, we'll use the chance to make sure everybody who's here is on the same frequency. Wave off the rest and split up again.
He sat down in an incongruously prim-looking wooden kitchen chair. It was painted white with colorful flowers.
You'd think I'd be mindful of the dangers of clumping up, especially since our whole thing is decentralization. Not to mention I've spent 3 years fighting people we were never able to win any kind of lasting victory over precisely because they didn't centralize. They didn't depend on chains of command. They didn't have a single head we could chop off.
Billy looked serious. It aged him.
Johnny, human tendency is to seek comfort in another's company in trying times. Even us crazy individualist plains warriors types. No harm done, Johnny. Feds got their hands full right this minute, even if somebody drops a dime on us. So pat the brothers and sisters' cheeks and send them on their way with a glad heart.
Johnny grinned and nodded. He got up and went out. Anya observed how the others watched him with a look of reverence, even the hard-case Snake. Johnny had just done what no conventional leader or commander would, admitted a mistake to an outsider, and it hadn't diminished his standing in the eyes of the club a bit. Meanwhile, Billy, who'd dropped his clown mask to play the wise elder, was nodding to himself with a smile of pleasure, as if he'd invented Johnny. Interesting, she thought, and sipped her coffee. Johnny came back in.
Okay, we're not all sitting like ducks on a pond now, anyway. They'll spread the word to everybody else to stay sharp and wait for the word to move.
How will you get the word out?
Boys and girls will go deliver the word in person, as much as they safely can. Beyond that, we got us walkie-talkies.
But the feds can listen in on that.
That might be a little tricky with the encryption snake set up on our sets. Anyway, even if they cracked the crypto, well, let's just say them Navajos weren't the only code talkers in World War II. Even if they do get all the ink.
Anya stared at him.
Well, but it's not like they can't find Comanche speakers around here either.
Anya hoped the obvious example, Lieutenant Tom Tenbear's OHP, didn't have to be enunciated.
Do you think we're total idiots? We've been playing this game a while, even if the stakes have started rising dramatically.
Our Ms. Creed doesn't like to take things for granted.
Johnny pulled a chair around backward and sat down, facing Anya, with his arms across the bowed wooden back.
Do you, Anya? She wanted to make sure we had it covered.
We got code phrases and such in Numenu. Same thing the code talkers from all the nations did in World War II, in case the Japs caught Indians and made them translate. Of course, they never caught them carloads of Comanche the way they did them poor Navajo fellers in the Philippines.
That was MacArthur's fault.
True enough.
So, what can we do about this?
It was seeming less and less likely to her that this hostage-taking was coincidence, the more she thought about it.
You can't very well go out and try to throw a cordon around this new casino. The cops would scoop you up like a bunch of tadpoles in a net.
I think she's getting the hang of our folksy Western metaphors, Johnny.
We can wait for what happens next.
Johnny seemed more truly alive than she had yet seen him. It made him more magnetic. Like he needs that, she thought.
Then what?
Johnny grinned like Billy.
It depends.
Johnny, Snake, Billy, Ricky, and Anya remained together in the kitchen. Johnny cooked a breakfast of eggs, ham, hash browns, wheat toast. It wasn't exactly a demanding menu, but he did it to perfection, while keeping up a high-energy stream of banter with his companions. Anya guessed that anything he did, he'd make sure to do it well. The television kept up its own stream of excited non-information. Apparently, nothing more was being heard from hostage takers or hostages. Though nothing was said explicitly, Anya and the rest got the strong impression the authorities were trying to prepare themselves to rush the place.
They like to negotiate when they can. Good PR. Even makes sense if they can resolve it that way. Less risk of what they call collateral damage.
Though they seem to care less about that every day.
True. But here at home, anyway, they're still shy about pulling really scary stuff in the view of the whole world, which any media situation like this is these days. But it also makes them crazy when they can't get anybody to talk back to them. Can't negotiate one way.
Most likely, there's all kinds of feuding all the way up the law enforcement ladder about whether to pull elements off the casino for this. Even postpone the opening.
He was truly enjoying himself, Anya could see.
He thinks we're about to see action, and he loves it.
She couldn't honestly say she didn't feel the same way. She still wasn't sure whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, but she was personally going nuts sitting still and not being able to do anything.
Nation won't let them put off the grand opening. Got too much riding on it, and money, reputation. They'll take it all the way to the top if they have to. And no politician so highly placed he or she'll turn down nice gifts of Indian casino cash.
Wait, we're getting reports now of an explosion near an elementary school in Lawton.
Holy shit. Let me go check the police scanner.
Ricky disappeared through the rounded archway of the door to the rest of the house. As the group sat and listened tensely in the kitchen, more information filtered in from various sources. The story played out that a car had exploded and burst into flames on a side street a half a block away from the school. The students had been inside at classes. There were no reports of injury.
Why would the dogs take so much trouble to avoid hurting people if they're starting a terrorist campaign?
Angel put a finger to her temple.
It's smart. They want to frighten people and shake up the authorities without making everybody hate them. Killing kids would pretty much unify the country against them.
Billy nodded.
Speaking of the old militia types, not that I knew any. They used to say after the Oklahoma City bombing that if McVeigh hadn't blown up those kids at the daycare in the Murrah building, he'd have been considered a national hero. Now, I'm not saying I agree with that, but they did have a point.
And even setting off a bomb near a school will freak everyone out completely. No matter what's going on elsewhere, the pigs have to respond to this one. Big time.
So, two diversions. That'll shake everybody's shit loose.
Except the dogs.
Look, I'm as skeptical of the authorities as anybody else. But won't they see these have to be diversions too?
Oh, hell yeah, Anya. Even Lamont sees that.
Even if they recognize it's a feint, what else can they do? As Snake says, threatening a school's the thermonuclear option. The authorities have to jump all over it.
So now what?
Dog soldiers are about to make their move.
Billy drained his fifth mug of black coffee.
We sit tight and hope to spot it in time and put a stick through their front spokes.
How are you going to do that if...
You were going to ask if the feds can't. What'd I tell you? Nothing happens in Indian country.
That people don't know about, yeah. But you guys had no clue about that terrorist confab at the training center.
The dogs were being ultra-hush-hush about that. We weren't looking for it. This is the Dog Society making its big play. Whatever it was they wanted those other radical fools to jump in on. It'll be public, splashy, and we're on full alert for whatever it turns out to be.
Like the government, we got eyes and ears everywhere. Only ours are human. Advantage, us.
He's right.
And as if cued, Ricky appeared in the doorway. He held a small yellow push-to-talk radio to his ear.
I think we got a hit.
A half mile ahead, it rumbled along parallel to their jouncing, hurtling course, throwing up a big wave of yellow dust from the indifferently graded road.
A hijacked gasoline tanker!
Anya yelled at Johnny Ten Bear's back, trying to make herself heard above the singing of the wind and the snarling of the motorcycle's big engine.
Don't the feds have some kind of security measures to prevent that?
They've got a program. More paperwork than implementation so far. But you have to know by now the dogs have their snouts in the federal trough somewhere, too. If there were safeguards, they circumvented them.
At unquestionably unsafe speed, they rode a dirt road southeast of Lawton. A dozen or so of the Iron Horse people charged behind them on their big stripped-down bikes. They'd gotten the tip from an old buddy of Billy Whitebird's. The buddy was neither a member of the Iron Horse people nor an Indian, Anya gathered. Rather, he was a participant in the underground economic network, the establishing and maintaining of which seemed to be among the club's main purposes.
But how do we know it's really been... Oh my God!
Anya saw a swarm of bikes and a pickup truck following in the tanker's dust. They immediately began to peel off to intercept the fast-closing Iron Horses. Some cut down a connecting dirt road to cross their path. En route, Johnny had shouted an explanation to Anya that this area had been grid-graded in preparation for an entire phantom subdivision. Investment homes, products of the real estate bubble, now burst. The houses would never be built. The roads remained, turning gradually into arroyos from rain and wind. Anya could make out the black-painted faces of the approaching riders. Most wore buckskin leggings and went bare-chested despite the overcast cold. They were pretty seriously committed to this reenactment stuff. Some raised hands toward the horses. Thin gray smoke gouts whipped away by passing wind as they opened fire. The bullets came nowhere near, as far as Anya could tell. No spouts of dirt or miniature sonic booms of high-velocity projectiles passed by. Not surprising, given their terrible firing platforms.
What do they think they're reenacting, the Rogue Warrior?
With a snarl of a big V-twin engine, Billy Whitebird pulled alongside them.
You see that posse of posers? They're wearing feathers!
Anya saw it was true. At the back of most of the enemy riders' heads flapped an eagle feather. The missing ones, she suspected, had been plucked away by the breeze. Leading the procession down the connecting road ahead, right in front of a pickup truck full of men with M16s, rode a man on a motorbike who sported a full-flowing plains feather bonnet.
What an asshole!
Johnny's own long hair was tied in a ponytail and tucked down the back of the olive drab t-shirt he wore beneath his colors to prevent it flapping in Anya's face.
You're supposed to get awarded those feathers one by one for counting coup.
I think it's a case of entitlement gone amok, since if you look real close, that's little Georgie wearing that tourist curio. That fat bastard's been behind this all the fucking time.
Holy shit, you're right!
We'll clear the way!
Billy's grin widened, and he wound out the throttle,
Better haul out that piece we got you, Anya. You probably won't hit anything with it, but you'll give the bastards reason to stand back.
Already on it!
Anya pulled her Glock 23 from a holster at the small of her back. She wished she dared pull back the slide enough to confirm a round was chambered. She'd reaffirmed the handgun was loaded several times already. The impulse was pure habit, but it was a good habit. Dog soldiers on dirt bikes had cut cross-country. They began passing through the horse column, firing handguns and even Car 4 full-auto carbines one-handed. Anya blazed away at a couple, missing as Johnny had predicted. Well, she'd expected it too. Hitting a fast-moving target from a platform that was also moving, and moreover bouncing all the hell over the rutted road, was basically impossible, save by mad accident. And indeed, when the dogs began swirling around in the field beyond for another pass, a quick look around showed no horses had fallen.
Told you.
But they're on dirt bikes!
No motorcycle expert, she did know the smaller machines were more agile, far better cross-country than the burly horse choppers, which were optimized for long-distance highway cruising.
Yeah, but our target's bound tighter to the road than we are. And these dogs don't live to ride the way we do. Bunch of dilettantes.
And indeed, Anya saw several of the horses vault defiantly from the saddles of their bikes to stand one-footed on a side peg before hooting and resuming their seats. The Comanche had always been reputed among the best horsemen among the horse-worshipping Plains nations. Apparently, her comrades took the whole iron horse thing literally.
Impressive! But what about the pickup with all the guys with guns?
Watch Billy!
The crossroad still lay a quarter mile ahead. Bent low over his handlebars, Billy rode straight at the big pickup truck. The dog soldiers in the back were firing furiously over the top of the cab with full-size M16s, and obviously missing. Billy leaped up to stand on his seat, giving them a double-barreled finger as his machine slowed with his hand off the throttle. The bike wobbled. He jumped back down to the saddle as lightly as a gymnast, grabbed the bars, and veered off into the grass as the truck roared past. The road had a drainage ditch running alongside it. Drawing his pistol, Billy circled back around and into the dry, weed-choked ditch, following the big truck. The dog soldiers in the back had jostled one another all out of any order when he went past the first time. Some grabbed for handholds in case the massive Harley slammed head-on into the truck. Others swung around, shooting, hoping with wild optimism to hit him. They were still untangling themselves when Billy rolled up the inner bank onto the road next to the truck, almost inside arm's reach. He pushed out the chunky revolver until its 4-inch barrel was almost pressed to the front tire. Billy yanked his front wheel right hard, putting a boot down and taking off at a right angle to the road.
Yeah! Classic buffalo hunter move!
Closing from 100 yards behind, Johnny and Anya saw the truck veer into the ditch and slam onto its side, bounding over the winter tan grass. Dog soldiers and their long black rifles spilled out. They were picking themselves up and helping one another to their feet as Johnny whipped past them up the crossroad in pursuit of the runaway tanker. Though Anya had no way to be certain, none seemed badly injured. They were certainly hardcore, these dogs, dilettantes or no, and she already knew they were deadly dangerous. A swirling battle had developed, or rather the dogs, on their more agile machines, swirled around the horses, who charged on single-mindedly after their quarry. Both sides shot at each other, but if anybody went down, Anya didn't see. Anya leaned forward into Johnny's back. Conscientiously, she kept the Glock pointed skyward with her trigger finger braced on the frame instead of inside the guard.
What's the plan?
I'm open!
Johnny sounded as if he were totally enjoying himself. As if he'd enjoy it, live or die.
Get in close to the tanker's rear. I'll climb up the back and go for the cab. Take out the driver.
Johnny turned his head briefly to blink back at her through his aviator shades. Mirrored in his eyes, she saw the very question she was asking herself. Did I actually just say that?
You're crazy!
Of course I'm crazy. Look, I can do it. It's the only way. Unless you trust me to drive the bike while you climb up.
By the tensing of his shoulders, she could tell what he thought of that. About the same as she did, actually. But it was true. They weren't going to be able to shoot out enough of the big rig's 18 tires to slow it down. And there were three bad boys riding up top the tank itself, armed with full-length M16s, lying down and aiming, at least sort of. They'd likely pick off any horses who got close enough to take a moving shot at the driver in his high cab. And as Johnny turned onto the road behind the tanker, Anya saw yet another long black barrel sticking out the passenger side window of the cab.
You mean it?
Just do it before I come to my senses.
I'll call the club to give you fire support.
Wait, on a tanker full of gasoline?
Tanker will probably self-seal if our bullets can even punch through. Those puppies are tougher than you think. Anyway, bullets don't start fires for shit, even in gas. Believe it, I know.
Go for it.
With a full-throat snarl, a bike pulled up beside them. Snake was riding it. She caught Anya's eye, gave her a thin smile and a salute with her .45. Then she swerved off the road and gunned ahead to shoot at the gunman atop the stolen tanker. The rear gunner man lay on his bare belly, shooting single shots. That metal must be cold, Anya thought. A shift in the flow of movement caught her eye. She looked aside in time to see a riderless horse motorcycle bounce across the prairie for 20 yards before veering to one side and toppling in a cloud of dirt and bits of dried grass. She grimaced. She wondered who it was. Hoped he hadn't been badly hurt. Or she. Even Angel, who looked 14 and, like her name, rode with the club to battle this morning. It wasn't the traditional plains way. It was the new traditional iron horse way. Yellow muzzle flames flared like suns right toward Anya. Bullets cracked by her head so near she turtled down inside the borrowed leather jacket she wore. Johnny put his head down between his handlebars and gunned the engine. Despite its double load, the powerful vintage bike leaped ahead at crazy speed. It caromed high off the bumps and rattled as if coming to pieces. Anya wasn't sure how he could possibly keep the machine on course, but he did. She tucked her stubby Glock back in its holster and clung to him hard. Gunfire crackled from close behind. Iron Horse people were closing in, firing at the tank truck gunner as they came. Anya hoped they had the sense to aim high. It would really suck to take a round through the back of her head from her own guys. The gasoline tank's rear loomed before her like an oval silver cliff. The gunner up top winced as a bullet whanged off metal near him. He jumped up trying to keep Johnny and Anya in his sights as they got close to the bumper. The horses loosed a rapid-fire volley at the dog soldier. Glancing around, Anya saw the head of Black Bull Jake, a Kiowa, snap back as he took a bullet through the forehead. Riding at his side, Snake had to veer wildly off the road to keep from being knocked down by his out-of-control bike. Then Johnny was up alongside the left end of the tanker's big corrugated metal rear bumper. Not letting herself think about it, Anya grabbed his shoulders. Using him to brace herself, she clambered up onto her seat. Then she jumped for the bumper.